Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Happy New Year morning drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game, Derek Mason, Braden Gall, Munson producing, spinning the hits. It is 2020 and it is a Thursday, although it feels strange. I feel like it's 2011 and it's like a Tuesday, but whatever. Titans and Patriots. Obviously, we've got big news with the Winter Classic. Preds fall 4-2 yesterday afternoon. Ryan Ellis knocked out early in that game by Corey Perry, who was kicked out of the game. Obviously, Tennessee and Indiana coming up tonight. We'll talk with Wes Rucker from GoVols 24/7 in just a few minutes. Joe Rexroad in the final hour as the Titans and Patriots. By the way, quickly, the NBA lost a major piece of its puzzle over the last 30 years with David Stern passing away. I think 3 weeks ago had a brain hemorrhage. And so, obviously, a sad story there. A guy that transformed a league. When he took over, I believe, in 1984, I believe the NBA Finals were on tape delay. And to see where the league has come today, I think he deserves – he's one of the most powerful and influential sports people in the history of American sports.
Yeah, I think you can – you know, if you're talking about, you know, sports and that commissioner, you know, taking it from one and the other, you think about Paul Tagliabue and probably even before Paul, and then you think of what David Stern did. I think the best, I think the one thing that he did when he became commissioner that has really helped to propel the NBA over any league, I mean any league, is that he allowed the players to have an identity. He allowed the players to have a voice. He made
put him on a platform.
Yeah, he made that league about the players. It wasn't about the coaches.
Teams.
It was about players. Yep. And now other leagues are trying to figure out how to do that, and they just can't. Yep. When it comes to popularity of players, the NBA is by far ahead of every sport. I mean, every major sport. Now, you know, listen, soccer has you know, they have their, you know,
worldwide
four or five, you know, guys that everybody know, Messi and guys like that. The NBA NFL has Brady, and they have a handful of guys that people know about. People know about a handful of guys in baseball. But in basketball, it's more than a handful of guys.
Yeah, Mike Trout's the best player in baseball, and you walked down the street, nobody
would know who he was.
I think you're right. He made it about the star, and it helped that he had Bird and Magic when he took over. It helped that Jordan came along right after that, and he marketed those guys better than anybody else, so he just deserves a lot of credit. He made it a global brand, not just a local brand, not just a U.S. brand, but you're right. They were in the Stone Ages as a tape delay, and the NBA Finals on tape delay is beyond comprehension.
Yeah.
Like, that's beyond – not on national television, not live. Are you insane? So, again, he passed away 77 years old, huge influence on sports in our culture today, and just a sad story. Again, the brain hemorrhage from 3 weeks ago, it's just a terrible story. So, wanted to make sure we got that in there and had a few seconds to think about that and mention that. The Tennessee Titans will play the New England Patriots, and I'm just curious what you guys have seen, because – this team in particular plays well or plays better when the other team is in the spotlight. Do you agree with that? Like, when the Browns are the spotlight and everyone's talking about the Browns and the Browns are getting coverage and the Browns this and the Browns that, well, the Titans play pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've seen them play pretty well against big-time quarterbacks. It feels like this team plays well when they are the disrespected underdog, if that's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they are that this weekend. Have you noticed much media coverage nationally for the Titans? Have you seen them getting a lot of love, or has it been all about the Patriots?
You know, honestly, if I'm the Patriots, I would feel disrespected if I'm the Patriots, because everybody believes that the Titans are the better team. Everybody believes that the Titans should win this game. If you're going to beat the New England Patriots, this is the year you beat them. You know, everybody's saying Tom Brady, he's losing it. You know, this offense is horrible. They miss Gronk. The defense, the last couple of games, they play uncharacteristically bad. So all of these negatives are pointing toward New England. And the only reason I believe they are sort of getting the benefit of the doubt is because they've proven that they can win. They are a proven commodity with Brady and Belichick at the helm. That's the only reason I believe that they're even a favorite.
They're a 5-point favorite.
Yeah, that's the only reason they're even a favorite.
Can both teams play the disrespect card? Because it's a great observation on your part. It's absolutely correct that Patriots are getting all the coverage, but a lot of it's negative.
Yeah.
A lot of it is, well, is this the last go? Is the dynasty on the way down? What's Brady going to do after the season? Like, you're right that they still get all the coverage. They soak up all the oxygen in the room, right? When the Patriots are involved, it's hard to find room for your brand to be a part of the conversation. But a lot of people like the Titans.
Yeah.
In this matchup, they just don't talk about it. They talk about the Patriots. They talk about it being a Patriot issue. Bill Belichick and the end of the dynasty. And if you're going to get him now. I feel like both teams could actually play the disrespect card, and that's pretty hard to do, to find a game where both teams can go, we feel disrespected, because nobody's talking about the Titans. But if they are, they're saying things like you. Hey, they're sneaky good. They're playing better. Tannehill's great. Like, they're saying positive things.
They're giving them, I think, yeah, obviously, if this was the New York Titans as they were before, then they would get more coverage. You know, obviously, because they're in a bigger market and whatnot. So they would get, if they went on this run and Ryan Tannehill was a quarterback and they were in New York, they would get more coverage.
Can you imagine Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley doing what Derrick Henry and Ryan Tannehill did?
Oh, my goodness. It's just billboards everywhere.
Right.
I think if they're in a bigger city, they would get more of the coverage. They would get more of the oxygen in the room. But because they're here in Nashville, they will never, and I repeat, never, ever get the coverage unless they go 16-0 or win the Super Bowl. They will get the coverage that they deserve. And
can you not use
maybe
that?
Maybe they use that.
Yeah, can you use that?
As a, you know what, you know, not necessarily they disrespecting us, but they're not talking about us, you know, as much as they should. Maybe the Titans like it that way. Maybe that's how Vrabel wants it. But then on the flip side, I know Tom Brady is fuming right now. Oh, they think I've lost it? They think I've lost it? Okay. All right. I'm showing them. Bill Belichick is probably just sitting back and just, I don't know, eating some corn chips. I don't know what he's doing.
Gluten-free.
Gluten-free, by the way.
Corn chips is one of those things. Sorry. I'm sorry. Derek, why'd you go and talk about corn chips? We were talking about this yesterday at a New Year's party. Like, we all got together to watch the Winter Classic, and we had our kids and stuff, and we were having fun, and there was some chili and some chips. And we had some Bloody Marys, because I know you guys love Bloody Marys. So in honor of both Marquise and Derek, I had a Bloody Mary.
Not.
but it's funny, because vodka and tortilla chips, they all now say gluten-free.
Yeah.
They've never had gluten. In the first place, there was never any vodka that had gluten in it to begin with.
Do they really have a gluten-free on vodka?
Tito's, right on the jar, it says gluten-free. Tortilla chips now. Every bag of tortilla chips you go pick up at the store says gluten-free.
Are you serious?
Because they never had gluten in the first place. Stop tricking us with your marketing.
Oh, my goodness.
I know we were talking about Tom Brady, but now tortilla chips are trying to get one in over on you.
Hey, man, that's how they trick the consumer.
They're just putting gluten-free on everything, and it's like, dude, you never had gluten in you.
Slapping gluten-free on diapers. I didn't know.
There was never any gluten in the diapers. My 18-month-old is gluten. She's got a gluten irritant on her behind. So we took the gluten out of the diaper.
Oh, man. Okay,
all right, here's the water. Here, bottled water, gluten-free. Wait a second.
Hold on.
I didn't know there was any wheat in my water.
Hell, there might be. You never know.
I guess you might be right. Sorry. I'm sorry. We had a major discussion yesterday about this.
Man.
So you reminded me about the damn tortilla chips. None of y'all had any gluten. Stop telling me that you don't have any gluten in you and that it's great and it's this new thing that you guys discovered how to make gluten-free tortilla chips. No. Always been gluten free. Anyway, both teams are disrespected. Titans, yeah. Patriots.
And the Titans are going to. The Titans can use this as a. You know, I think the Titans are. I don't think they're, from a national standpoint, because there hasn't been anything negative said about the Tennessee Titans. I think they are just solely looking at trying to slay the dragon. You know, hey, if we're going to, you know, go from this mantra of good to great.
No better chance than this.
They need to erase that mantra and start over again. There's no better way.
If you beat the Patriots, hang on. If you beat the Patriots, can you say, look, y'all, we did it.
No.
You have to win two games?
You got to win two games.
Okay.
Matter of fact, you got to get to the Super Bowl to me.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. Because I think AFC Championship is a pretty great season.
Yeah, that's a good season. That's
good
a
good season?
AFC Championship, a great season in the NFL is going to the Super Bowl and winning it.
That's elite.
Well, great is going. Elite is winning it.
Okay.
Good.
All right.
You're going from better to good, or good to better.
You got a really high.
You're going from good to better.
You got high standards, man.
but to them, I think it's about getting. Even though they beat New England during the regular season, they didn't beat them during the playoffs two years ago. And it's getting over that hump. It's beating a team that they haven't had success against in the playoffs. Even going back to, you know, the days we played them, we lost to them in the playoffs. So this team hadn't had success against the New England Patriots at their place in the playoffs. So it's getting over that hump of beating New England. I think that's how they're looking at it. And then, you know, it just gives them another opportunity to advance and play another meaningful football game.
Adoree Jackson back on the practice field 2 days in a row. He is not the savior that everyone thinks he is, but it is a big plus for this Titans team to have him back. I have a very simple question for you, Derek, about the Patriots when we come back. It's as simple as it gets. It's as clean cut as it gets, and I think if they do it, they win the game. I'm going to ask you about it when we return. Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. If you miss any of the show, we have moved our on-demand audio to Apple and Spotify. We know not everybody listens to every second of the show. So if you hear something you don't like, I'm sure we said something you do like earlier in the show. So just check out the on-demand audio. Search Morning Drive in Apple or Spotify or log on to thegamenashville.com to find our daily audio. Rate, review, subscribe today. We've already talked a lot about the Winter Classic, of course, with the Preds falling yesterday 4-2. A spectacular event. But everything else, not so much. With the injury to Ryan Ellis and a 4-point swing in the Central Division standings, we'll get back to that as Joe Rexroad will join us at the top of the hour. Wes Rucker, when we come back in just a few minutes, in about 15 minutes from now, as the Vols are on the field tonight against Indiana in the Tax Slayer Gator Bowl, the final game of the regular season for the Tennessee Volunteer Football Program before they head on into their break. I got a very simple question for you. Very, very straight to the point, very simple. I don't know what the answer is. How does this team, Adoree Jackson, again, the big news, I think, over the holiday, New Year's Eve holiday, is that Adoree Jackson's been back on the field practicing 2 mm-hmm. days in a row. That is a good sign for the Tennessee Titans. I do think, and I think you've said this, Derek, that he is not just this magic elixir that's going to solve every problem. He is not. I think people are overhyping his value to some degree. But it certainly is a big help that he's back. How do you stop Tom Brady? How do you stop Tom Brady? That's my question for you.
I mean, if you look at what other teams have done, now maybe it's a little bit different this year because they don't quite have the weapons they used to have. But the MO, the template, or the game plan that was given, and it was given by the Baltimore Ravens, this is how you contain or minimize quarterbacks like Tom Brady, Peyton Manning. This is how you do it. You get to them. You hit them. You don't necessarily have to sack them, but you hit them. You get pressure up the middle. You hit them. You consistently come at them. Because I don't think there's anything you can do to fool Tom Brady. There's not
mentally,
a defense you can play that's going to fool Tom Brady. What you do is you try to get in your looks as late as possible as a defense. You try to get you know, up the middle pressure on a quarterback, because Tom Brady, if he's not allowed to step up in a pocket, his game diminishes some. If he has to step side to side, especially this year, he's vulnerable as a quarterback. I think that's the only way that you beat this team, is that, and the Titans did it, you know, last year. They got pressure up the middle. They got pressure on him. They got to, you know, they got to their looks late. And then on offense, they made plays when there were plays to be made. They ran the ball effectively with Derrick Henry that game. That's what you have to do. Now, this New England defense is much different than it was last year. But still, you control the clock. And if there are plays to be made against this team, especially this year's defense, they must be made. You can't say, oh, I get them next time, because next time might not roll around. You might not get an opportunity to catch a deep go or post, you know, on Gilmore.
AJ Brown may have one shot.
If it's there, you got to make that play. It happened a few years ago, I remember, against Kansas City, where, you know, Kansas City had a really good defense. They were playing Tennessee here during the season. And Tennessee made one play to their wide receivers. It was a play to be made, and the kid out of that was in Miami and came here. The receiver,
Rashard Matthews.
Yeah, Rashard Matthews. One play, and he made that one play on third down. It was a deep pass. I think it was a comeback or corner route.
Yep.
He made that one play against that defense, against that good team, and they end up ultimately winning a game. That's how it has to be against New England. If you have a play that be made, whether it's A.J. Brown, Corey Davis, Jonnu Smith, Sharp, you got to make it. You can't, you know, clap your hands together and say, oh, I get him next time. Well, next time might not roll around against that defense, because you might fool Bill Belichick one time, but you ain't getting him second time. So you better make do on that first time.
Now, it is a tale of two halves for both teams, right? Because the Tennessee Titans, we know the differences. After the six games, you go to Tannehill, the offense changes dramatically. The defense actually suffers and goes the wrong direction. Well, the Patriots' defense is historically great in the first eight games. They go 8-0, and they're forcing turnovers like crazy. Six against the Jets, four against the Giants, four against the Bills, four against the Dolphins, three against the Browns. I mean, just forcing turnovers like crazy. They're running the football fairly effectively. They're not turning the ball over. Brady was throwing it well. Then the last they played the Baltimore Ravens, and they lost 37-20. And their final eight games, the Patriots are 4-4, and they're averaging 21 points a game. That's it. 4-4, 21 points a game on offense. Now they're protecting the football and they're running the ball well, so they're doing things that you know, like a well-coached team is going to do. 135 yards rushing against Miami in a loss, 143 against Buffalo, 175 against the Dolphins, 145 against the Texans. They're running the ball well, and they're protecting the football. They created five turnovers against the Bengals a couple of weeks ago, but I almost don't count anything that happened against the Bengals. If you just, because the Bengals are terrible. If you take all those stats, if you take all those stats out of the final eight games from the Bengals game, the numbers just don't look all that great for New England in any way, shape, or form. The defense is really salty. There's just no way around that. But is it built from the front end back, or is it built from the back end? They've invested more in their secondary than they have their front seven, which you would think allows Derrick Henry and the offensive line to maybe find some territory to move. I am still concerned about the other side of the ball. Like, how do you stop Tom Brady? Because like you said, mentally, you are not going to trick him into anything. Mentally, he's going to know what to do. Now, can he physically make the same plays? Can his receivers make those plays? That's a different question. But it's not like he's going to step to the line of scrimmage and then not know what's coming. So if Jeffrey Simmons and Jarrell Casey can get pressure up the middle and force him off his spot, to me, that's how they won the game last year. So to me, it's pressure with the two big guys up the middle.
No, you're absolutely right. That's how you defeat Tom Brady. That's how you slay the dragon, is you find a weak spot. Well, the weak spot is you try to get pressure up the middle on Tom Brady, where he can't step up in the pocket and deliver passes. Not to say that Tom can't go side to side and still deliver, you know, passes. He has this uncanny ability as a 40-year-old to elude pressure.
Footwork's still good.
Yeah, but it gets harder when he tries to do it from side to side as opposed to stepping up in the pocket. So that's going to be the challenge for their offense. I look at this is what I'm trying to figure out, because we look at the New England Patriots and we say, well, you know, maybe their schedule is if you look at their schedule and their record is, well, if you look at their record, it's a little bit misleading. But just look at their schedule and you see why they won as many games as they did at the beginning of the season. And then when they played, playoff caliber teams, you know, they didn't fare well other than I think they beat one team and that's a winning team. That might have been Buffalo. Yeah, that was Buffalo twice, beat them twice. But the Tennessee Titans are sort of in that same boat, too. In this win streak, the only team they've beaten with a winning record a playoff team, was the – who did they beat? The Chiefs. They beat the Chiefs with a winning record. And when they played against sort of stingy defenses, their offense truly hadn't fared well other than against the Saints. But the Saints end up taking their number one, you know, their number one threat out of the game in A.J. Brown. And they had to find other ways to get it done. That's a plus, yes. But, you know, on the flip side, we can also look at it as, you know, the Titans only beat one playoff team in this run. And when they had to play.
Technically, they beat the Texans, but does that really count? No.
Nah, that last game.
They weren't even playing their dudes.
Yeah, that last game don't count. But they struggled against playoff caliber teams. And you just wonder, now that they have to play the top defense in the National Football League, how are they going to fare? Because when they had to do it last time early in the season, I know it was a different quarterback and everything else.
Right, right.
But when they had to do it early in the season, they couldn't do it. They couldn't beat Buffalo. And that was, at the time, they were, I think, the second or third best defense in the National Football League. They were not able to do it. They were not able to beat Jacksonville when Jacksonville was healthy. You know, and
well, again, different quarterback. I mean, Marcus terrible.
You know, but it is what it is. This team, you know, they hadn't fared well.
I mean, listen, this is a perfect test,
exactly,
for Ryan Tannehill, for the new look offense to go into to the evil empire and to face the, you know, the Death Star, and to look at Bill Belichick in the eyes and say, all right, we're going to run the football with Derrick Henry. We're going to go play action. Arthur Smith, perfect test for Arthur Smith. Perfect test for all these guys that have a chance to prove themselves. A win over the Patriots gives all of these guys proof of concept. Arthur Smith, Derrick Henry, Ryan Tannehill, the offensive line, they all can look at each other and go, see, look, we can do it. Against an elite defense on the road in the playoffs when it matters the most against the evil empire, we can do it. And that is the – there's no better way to prove yourself – and to shut up people like me who were doubting Ryan Tannehill all summer long and all this stuff. You've already done a great job of that as it is, but this is how you do it. You go up and you win a game in Foxborough. Wes Rucker going to join us from Go Vols 24/7 as the Volunteers and the Hoosiers, not a basketball game, are playing a football game today. Of course, wrapping up the football season for the Big Orange. We'll talk to Wes Rucker about what he expects to see tonight and what does it mean right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Tennessee, Indiana tonight in the Gator Bowl down in Florida in Jacksonville. 7 o'clock, 6 o'clock Central Time, I believe, or is it 7 o'clock Central Time? I can't even get my time straight. I feel like it's a Tuesday, and it's 2019. Wes Rucker joining us here from Go Vols 24/7. Do you know what year it is or what day it is, Wes? Welcome to the show.
Actually, I think it's Thursday, second, maybe. I know that because it's game day. It's the only reason I know.
There you go. I have a message for all fans from every team in bowl games. Don't take too much from the outcome tonight. Enjoy the game. Enjoy getting to watch your team play. If you win, celebrate. If you lose, you can get angry if you want to. I don't think there's really any reason to. It doesn't mean anything. They crushed Northwestern a couple of years ago, then came back and were the pick to win the East and couldn't get the job done. They crushed Iowa a couple of years ago, and Iowa came back and went 12-0 and almost went to the playoffs. So how would you advise fans to value the outcome of tonight's game or not?
Yeah, you know, Braden, I don't think the results of bowl games matter much. I mean, I think obviously if you're in a playoff game, they matter. If you're not, even if you're in like a New Year's Six, I don't think they matter all that much. I mean, it's not an exhibition because the stats count, but it's really not that important. I mean, really, it's about the experience, I think, and kind of, you know, a reward for kids and fans who have kind of been through a long season, and then you get to go have a nice trip at the end of it. So I don't put too much in it. I don't think it's unimportant, but I don't think it really matters all that much.
Now, Wes, from a coaching standpoint with Jeremy Pruitt, obviously, you know, this team, we know, you know, the story of the city, of the season, and he's done a remarkable job at keeping his team together, and now they're in a bowl game with 7 wins. But is this more so for the coaching staff getting an opportunity? Yes, he's going to play the older players. Everyone wants to see Juwan Jennings' his last game. But is this an opportunity for him to play some of these younger players and get an idea of what he has in this type of game against an opponent you're not familiar with? See how these guys react and how they play.
I think to a certain extent, Derek, yeah, I think that's probably true. You know, I think that he's a really competitive guy, and you look at how much he's won throughout his career as an assistant, and he's not going to want to lose the game. And I think he'll want to send these guys off the right way. So I don't think they'll be just totally kind of willy-nilly about it, but I do think they'll mix in more young guys. And especially, you know, you look at a situation like Juwan Jennings being out for the first half, that really gives you a chance probably to throw a couple more freshmen out there for some reps and see some things. You know, I it wouldn't surprise me if they rotate just a little bit more defensively. I do think that they do want to see what they can look at for next year. But I also think they've gotten some of bowl practice to see some of that stuff. That's what you get those 15, that's why I think if you're a program like Tennessee, the 15 bowl practices to me matter more than the actual result of the bowl does, because you get a chance to see a lot of these guys do a lot of things. But, you know, to answer your question, yeah, I think will there be times that during the regular season he would have hesitated to play guys, but he'll play them in this game? I absolutely think that will be the case.
Wes Rucker joining us here from GoVols 24/7. And, Wes, what sort of early defections do you expect off this roster, be it to the NFL or transfers or whatever? And then what is the quarterback, like, of the conversation in the offseason about this team, do we expect it to be 85% about the quarterback situation or like 65% about the quarterback situation?
I think more like 65%, honestly. I think that the Bailey kid coming in, you know, that'll kickstart some interest a little bit. And then if Brian Maurer kind of blows up physically in the offseason or something like that, you might see some conversation to that end. But really, I would tell people, if you're Tennessee, look at most of the past decade, right? You're probably going to need more than one anyway. So whoever it is, you're probably going to see the other guy at some point along the way, because that's just kind of the way it goes in this era. But I think the way Garantano's played a little bit, to end this season, I think he would have to get off to a horrible start next year for there to be kind of another controversy. You know, he's a senior. He will be at that point, and I think it'll be his. In terms of, you know, defections, I mean, obviously there were a few already, guys going to the portal, guys looking to go other places. And then when you talk about the NFL, I mean, Trey Smith's got a decision to make. So we'll see what he does. You know, it wouldn't surprise me if after spring camp there may maybe a couple more guys leave. But that's just sort of the nature of the business these days. I mean, there's several hundred guys that are going to be in the portal. So I don't think it's like guys jumping off the ship or anything like that. It'll just be a matter of, do a couple guys want to follow those offensive linemen who left and get more playing time elsewhere? And with a guy like Trey Smith, you know, what will he want to do?
Sticking with the bowl game and what he potentially has coming back, and you spoke of Garantano, and more than likely he's the guy, unless he just, you know, fumbles it all away and give those other guys an opportunity to throw their name in a hat. What is it that he needs to do this offseason to assure, I believe, the coaching staff that he doesn't revert back to what he was at the beginning of the season?
You know, Derek, I think he needs to make sure he continues to expand his knowledge of Jim Chaney's system, because I think if the coaching staff made a mistake early this season, I think the mistake they might have made was I think they gave all the keys to Garantano without him really understanding the system as well as they thought that he did. And by that, I mean some of the decisions he makes at the line of scrimmage, because I know early in the season he would make some audibles at the line that were not ones that they wanted him to make. They weren't seeing things the same way. And I think Garantano, and he's admitted this to his credit, he kind of learned the system a little better as the season progressed. And he saw some things. He finally started seeing things the way coaches wanted him to see them at the line when he was examining protections. When he was kind of looking at checks at the line, you know, hot routes, things of that sort. I think he got better at that as the season progressed as much as anything, and that's what he needs to do. Because in terms of, you know, being a leader with the guys, you watch him with the guys, you know, they get along. You know, they respond to him. He's got his friends, certainly, but everybody on the team seems pretty good with him, and I think that part of it's fine. It's just learning the offense and the system and making sure he and Chaney are always on the same page.
Wes Rucker joining us here, and I'll let you go after this one. How close, obviously, SEC play about to start for the basketball program, but without Lamonte Turner and losing 3 out of 4 to the better competition that they've played, how quickly could this team lose the fan base, if that makes sense, considering how high this program has been the last couple of years from an interest standpoint? Are they in this a dangerous place right now going into SEC play, or are you confident that they can maintain a level of competition?
You know, Brett, I think Tennessee basketball fans are probably one of the most underrated fan bases in the country in terms of how many there are, how loyal they are. I think that's been a bit of a misnomer for years that they're not a gray basketball fan base. I think they're a pretty darn good one. And I think the fact that they have all those studs coming in next year, I don't think people will lose the program long term. I think that they may grow a little bit disinterested with this season's team. We'll see. Because I think a kid like Vescovi can give them a little bit of a boost, can help them a little bit. And I think they've still got some players on that team. You know, without Lamonte Turner, it's not going to be the same. It's just not for this team probably. But I've seen Rick Barnes compete with less than what he has right now. I do think it's going to be a rough adjustment period. And I think you might be looking at this being like an NIT team or something. You know, that really might be what they are. But I think that I'm not ruling them out for the NCAA tournament. I'm not ruling them out for a kind of salvaging project here, because I've seen Rick Barnes and his staff do more with less. So I think that it's going to be a bumpy ride. I think some people are going to get frustrated. They're going to talk about his $5 million contract now and yada, yada, yada. But I think for the long-term health of the program, I think they'll be just fine.
Yeah, I agree with that. And they've got a couple of nice resume wins already. It feels like college basketball, and I'm with you, I think the Tennessee fan base is very underrated nationally, but college basketball has to fight and scrap and claw to keep people interested. And it just doesn't feel like – I'm with you, they'll be fine next year. It does feel like this season could go south quickly, though, and the fans might the national conversation or the interest in the program could dissipate quickly if they're not, you know, if they're 500 in the SEC or whatever, which seems like it's a very real possibility.
Yeah, no, I think you're onto something there, right? And I think that could happen. It's just really it's a matter of how quickly can they adjust to this thing without Turner, because if they can do it relatively quickly, you know, it'll still be okay. And I still think they'll beat a couple people they shouldn't, but, you know, now all of a sudden those midweek trips to the Mississippi schools and things like that, which have been kind of automatic wins the past few years, I don't think they will be this year.
Well, and it's a great year to get Auburn twice and Kentucky twice, all that good stuff. So, Wes, thank you so much. We do appreciate it, man. Happy New Year, and enjoy the game tonight.
Hey, no problem, man. Y'all good, man. Happy New Year.
Absolutely. Wes Rucker there, Go Vols 24/7 as well. Yeah, college basketball, it feels like with the loss to Lamonte Turner, Derek, that this team, like from an interest standpoint, it could fall off a cliff quickly. And it's just this year. I'm not talking about long-term or big picture of the program. I'm just talking about this year.
Well, it's the best player on this team. And when you lose the best player on your team and you don't have guys picking up the slack, then, you know, the people tend to lose interest, especially from a national standpoint, because I think this Vol team, from a national standpoint, the beginning of the season was on a lot of people's mind.
Memphis-Tennessee game.
Yeah, exactly.
Was a big national game.
And then, and it lived up to the hype, but then you lose Lamonte Turner, and now people are starting to, you know, it's like, okay, they're starting to look elsewhere. It's like, you know, it's like losing with any team, is, you know, losing your star player, and everybody's in, then you lose your star player, and people start to see the season slip away, and they're like, oh, okay, let's pay attention to something else. Oh, Vols playing in the bowl game? Okay, let's pay attention to that or something else.
Exactly. It's easy to lose interest in college basketball this time of year.
It's like with Memphis, when they lost Wiseman, people are still interested in how good this Memphis team can be because of the young talent that they still have on
that
really
team.
Good. And they're really good, and plus their coach is, you know, Penny Hardaway, by the way. And that's why they can kind of continue that interest. But it seems like the Vols can't because, I mean, Turner was probably the only star that you probably know on that team.
And I'm – listen, even with Turner, I'm not sure how good this team was going to be. I just –
there may be a tournament team.
They're a tournament team, maybe,
with
him. But now we're talking NIT.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's going to be hard to keep interest when you're NIT-level team. It just is, because college basketball is a tough sport to draw interest. And so, I mean, it is what it is. By the way, I have a basketball question about the Winter Classic that I'm going to ask Casey Alexander, if that makes any sense at all, coming up in the final hour. However, the Winter Classic yesterday, huge, huge success in one way. Not so much in another. We'll explain. Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. You're listening to Morning Drive, live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. Predators fall 4-2 in the Winter Classic. But listen, we'll get to the negative in a second. But the positives are... there are plenty of them, and that is that the NHL, its showcase event every single year, goes off and is just a brilliant exhibition for hockey, and to see 85,000 people plus at a football stadium in Dallas between two southern markets, I think is a glorious step in the right direction for the NHL. I thought both uniforms looked great. The weather cooperated. It got cooler as the night went along. The ice was a little choppy, but that's to be expected with an outdoor game. I thought Preds fans traveled extremely well, sold out all their tickets to the game, both Stars and Preds, in, you know, a matter of hours that day when tickets went on sale. I just thought, from an event standpoint, Derek, the entirety of the day, you know, with the pregame coverage, you know, all the work that our great team did out there, of course, from Ryan Porth down to Gina and Promotions and Chase McCabe and Darren and Willie and everybody, Pete and Hal, I just thought a fantastic event to celebrate the game of hockey outdoors like that. And the crowd shots were amazing. I just thought a great, taking the outcome and the injury to Ryan Ellis out of it, which we'll get to in a second, I thought by and large, just all of the hype and build up around the event was worthy. And I thought it was a really cool watch. I don't know about you guys. I thought it was a really cool watch. And, you know, it lived up to finally seeing your team get into that game.
Yeah, I think it lived up to the hype, so to speak. I think it was what they wanted it to be. The second largest crowd to watch an outdoor game in NHL history.
That's pretty cool.
You know, that's cool. You know, the support that, you know, the Nashville fan base showed to this team by traveling there and supporting the team, that's cool. You know, Dallas fans supporting them in a Cotton Bowl, you know, being there. The place was, I don't think there were many empty seats in the house when they scanned to the aerial view in and out of the game. It just seemed
those were cool shots.
Super packed. I would have loved to see.
Didn't they have a pig race too?
Yeah, but I would love
a pig
to
race.
See
how cool is a pig them. Race?
That was one of the best parts.
And Eddie Olchuk is like a huge racing guy. Like, he's a horse racing guy, and he's down there analyzing these pig races.
I would have loved to see the NHL sort of bring in more seats on the field level to surround the game, and how cool that would have been. I know it would probably would have blocked some of the people off that were like on the lower level, but I don't think you wanted, you know, front row seats anyway in that game because you couldn't see anything. Everybody would want
to
be up high.
You'd have to make them like basketball, like floor seats, and then you'd have to be able to see over someone's head, and it'd be like general admission at a concert.
Absolutely.
You know, you'd be like,
I think that would have been kind
of... Susie, down in front. I can't see.
I think that would have been sort of kind of cool, you know, to have. But other than that, I mean, they did a great job. And you know, it's not their first rodeo in regards to the Winter Game, Winter Classic. And, you know, it started off as a good game for the Preds. Didn't end that way. But for the most part, I mean, the NHL got
showcase.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What they want.
You know, it's funny you mentioned because visually you do, they put all the white stuff down to make it. It's not really snow. We know it's not snow.
Yeah. I'm looking
at
my
they're
like,
trying to make it
snow?
Look cold, I guess.
No, it's not.
And it's funny because you see the difference between the size of a hockey rink and the size of a football field.
Uh-huh.
Pretty. It's just when they're overlaid like that, you see the difference. In my head, I'm thinking about the Virginia Tech Tennessee game at Bristol Motor Speedway a couple of years ago when the field itself was so far away from all the stands. Because the football field is so much smaller than the racetrack. Can you imagine a hockey rink in the middle of Bristol Motor Speedway?
Oh,
it would
man.
Be so tiny sitting up in those grandstands. Because it gives you perspective, right, on how big the stadiums are and the playing surfaces are. And what it tells me, it just gives me perspective on how tight a rink is, really. How small, you know, 5-on-5 hockey is just a really, really tough game. And ironically, the Preds have been pretty good in 5-on-5 hockey. It's like the only time they've been good all year. Ryan Ellis takes a shot in the first 3 minutes of the game. He only played a minute 16 seconds yesterday. His second shift, Corey Perry, noted, you know, Preds villain from his days in Anaheim, just throws a completely unnecessary and what looks like very intentional elbow into Ryan Ellis's head. He is essentially knocked out, again, for lack of a better phrase, on the ice, down for a few minutes. Corey Perry gets a 5-minute major, and then, of course, the game, he gets ejected. I'm assuming there will be a fine or suspension of some sort. If Corey Perry is not villain number one for Predators fans before yesterday, he probably is clearly number one today, and he probably was already yesterday to begin with. So, you know, how long is Ryan Ellis out for? We'll see. Again, you don't want to speculate about injuries. It's irresponsible, but clearly he took a shot to the head. Clearly he was dazed, and clearly the doctors, whatever protocols are, they're going through it right now with Ryan Ellis. He's the second leading scorer on the team. So not only did you lose a game 4-2, you're now dead last in the standings in the Central Division. I'm reading ESPN's power rankings this morning with Emily Kaplan, and here's her write-up about the Nashville Predators, 20th in the power rankings. Here's her write-up. Two sentences. Find consistency. The end of 2019 featured so many ups and downs for this veteran and talented team. The goaltenders and star players seem to take too many nights off. Now the Predators are playing catch-up in the standings. It's time for them to find their 2020 groove. That just about sums it up in three sentences. No consistency, too many ups and downs. It's a veteran and too talented of a team to be where they are in the standings, and the goaltenders and star players aren't doing the job. That's about it right there.
Yeah.
She captured it.
She nailed it.
They have no business being 20th in the power rankings.
It's just disappointing. As I said earlier, you know, with this team, talent plus no production or inconsistency equals a waste. Again, talent plus no production plus inconsistencies equals a waste of what's going on right now. And you can put it, you know, you could put it how you want to, or, you know, justify it how you want to. This team has too much talent to be in a situation that they're in, too much talent to be playing the way that they're playing. And I know it's frustrating, frustrating to the Predator fans. It's frustrating to everybody. How do they fix that? I don't know. Because just when you think they've turned that corner, you know, they make a U-turn and they go right back to where they were before. And it's like, haven't y'all figured this out yet?
Yeah.
You know, it's, yes, I know they have goalie problems. And maybe that's the biggest issue is the goalie problems. You know, if you look at what Pecorine is doing, and, you know, one thing that's undefeated is Father Time. Yeah. And it seems like Father Time is catching up to Pecorine quickly. And he's not playing the way that we're accustomed to seeing him play. But there's nothing they can do about it. UC Saros is not playing well either. So what do you do as a franchise? Do you just go strictly to, you know, Soros and you know, hope that he works out of it? Or do you do what you're doing, stick with Pecorino and hope that because of his history, he will eventually, you know, play well enough to get you in the playoffs? And once the playoffs starts, I guess everything starts over and, you know, you can just go on a roll and play your best hockey and end up finding yourselves like they did a few years ago in the Stanley Cup. So
it's absolutely possible.
But this team is this is a disappointing team, flat out. This is a underachieving team. That's what they are. And it's only the truth. I'm only calling it how I see it. Too much talent to be playing the way that they're playing. And that's, you know, that is just that's appalling.
Yeah.
It's just, I'm trying to figure this team out.
Hey, good luck,
and I try,
dude.
And
good
I try luck, not man. To say anything, you know, with this team because they put so much good stuff in the bag that you're trying to find the silver lining in all of this. But then the more you pull stuff out, the more you see this is not a good team. It's 8 o'clock, like my computer said.
that means we got to go to break here. Yeah. Even the computer knows that.
Exactly. But I'm just trying to figure this team out.
Yeah,
and nobody
agree.
Has.
I agree. And I have one more note I want here. I want Predators fans to chime in on this, and they may not be back yet. And if you're listening on the app, that's great. You can text in or call us. I've heard some stories from fans that were there about how they were treated by Dallas Stars fans. And I'd like to know, not everybody has the same experience. One person could have a bad experience and everybody else could have a great experience. I'd like to call some actual experiences from this event. How were Dallas Stars fans acting yesterday? I would like to hear from Preds fans that were there, and it may take some time for everybody to get back in the city. So we shall see, but I'd like to do a little digging on that. We'll get to Joe Rexroad when we come back. Talk Titans, talk Preds. We'll do all that with our main man, Joe Rexroad from The Athletic, right here on Morning Drive.
10 hours on my feet, traffic, noise, everybody needs something from me. My head is spinning. I just need the world to stop for 1 second. But then I get home, shoes off, phone out, and I open Modo Casino. Hundreds of slots, classic table games. It's my instant reset. The variety I want in the quiet I need.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino. America's social casino.